We're going to bring the meeting to order because we have a lot to cover. You don't have to do this first. You guys. Good morning, everyone. Is Representative Wells here? Yes? No? Okay. Can you smile? We'll start with the presentation of this highly anticipated report that so many individuals have been waiting for the last couple of weeks. Good morning, and if you could identify yourself for our tape, we'd appreciate it.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Julie Schoenier, and I'm Director of the Health Economics Program at the Minnesota Department of Health. For committee members who may not be familiar with the work of this program, we collect and analyze data from many different sources to provide research and analysis on healthcare access, cost, and quality in Minnesota. I'm here today to present the results of the Health Department's review of a proposal to build a specialty psychiatric hospital in Woodbury, Minnesota. But first, I'd like to provide a little bit of background on the review process and why and how it is done. Since 1984, Minnesota has had a moratorium on licensing new hospital beds in the state. Acceptance to this moratorium must be approved by the legislature, and there are 23 exceptions listed in current law. In 2004, the legislature established a new process for review of requests for exceptions to the moratorium. Under this law, MDH must review the request and issue a finding as to whether the proposal is or is not in the public interest. It's important to note that the legislature still makes final decisions on exceptions to the law, so this is really an advisory report to the legislature. It is not a final decision. It's also important to note that it really isn't in the scope of the department's authority under this law to recommend changes to the proposal that we receive, although the legislature has in the past chosen to enact moratorium exceptions that are different from the original plan submitted to the department for review. In November 2007, we received the proposal to build a specialty psychiatric hospital in Woodbury, Minnesota. The request that is before the legislature is to enact a law that would allow for construction of a hospital with up to 144 beds, specifically for psychiatric and chemical dependency services, although the hospital would begin operations with 96 beds. Based on information provided to the department by Prairie St. John's, the proposed hospital would serve about 3,400 patients per year after the initial year of operations, growing to about 5,100 per year upon expansion to the full 144-bed capacity that has been requested. This table shows the breakdown of the proposed beds by type of service and age. Out of the initial 96 beds, 63 would be specifically for psychiatric care, and of those, 42 would serve children and adolescents. 12 beds would be devoted to chemical dependency services for adults, and 21 beds would serve adults with co-occurring psychiatric and chemical dependency conditions. Prairie St. John's did not provide specific details on how the 48 Phase 2 expansion beds would be allocated by age and type of service. The statute that created the public interest review process requires the department to consider five specific factors in its review of proposals. These factors are, first, whether the new hospital or hospital beds are needed to provide timely access to care or access to new or improved services. Second, whether the financial impact of a new hospital or hospital beds on existing acute care hospitals that have emergency departments in the region. Third, how the new hospital or hospital beds will affect the ability of existing hospitals in the region to maintain existing staff. Fourth, the extent to which the new hospital would provide services to non-paying or low-income patients relative to the level of services provided to these groups by existing hospitals in the region. And finally, last but not least, the views of affected parties. Since many of you have probably already jumped ahead to the conclusion of the report, let me start with the bottom line and tell you that the department's finding in the review is that the proposal is not in the public interest. I'll spend most of the rest of my presentation telling you how we reached this conclusion, but first, let me make a couple of things clear. First, the department's finding does not mean that there are no problems with the mental health system in Minnesota. There clearly are many problems that exist today, including patients having to travel long distances to receive care, waiting for extended periods in hospital emergency rooms, and many other frustrating experiences. The many personal stories that people shared with us during our review process are evidence that the system today fails to serve many patients well. Second, the finding is not a conclusion that there is no need for additional inpatient mental health beds in Minnesota, nor is it a conclusion that it is acceptable for patients to travel long distances. The report concludes that the scale of Prairie St. John's proposal is large relative to the documented needs, which is not the same thing as saying there is no need. And finally, this report is not a research study of Minnesota's mental health system with policy recommendations about how much additional capacity is needed and where. It's beyond the scope of the legislature's charge to the department under the public interest review law to include that type of information in our report, but the committee chair has asked me if I would share some of that type of information with you today, some of that information that came out of the analysis we did in our review that could be helpful in illustrating the potential scope of need, and I will spend a few minutes on that issue at the end of my presentation today. One of the first things that we did for this review was collect the most complete and current data that is available on current hospital capacity for psychiatric and chemical dependency services. We did this by calling every hospital in Minnesota that operates a psychiatric or chemical dependency unit and asking them about how many beds are in their unit, how many of those are currently staffed, and how many new beds they have coming online in 2008. We also analyzed information from a hospital discharge database that includes almost every hospital in Minnesota. We focused in particular on travel patterns for psychiatric and chemical dependency care compared to other types of hospital care, since having to travel long distances to receive care has been a matter of public concern. For this study, we were able to use information that the Minnesota Hospital Association has obtained through its partnerships with hospital associations in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa, greatly adding to our understanding of where Minnesotans go to receive hospital care. The public input part of the review process included public notices to interested parties soliciting comments on the proposal, a letter to hospital administrators in the Twin Cities and to hospital administrators throughout the state that operate mental health units, and a public hearing that was held in Woodbury on January 22nd. The hearing in Woodbury was attended by about 75 to 100 people, and we received 27 written comments on the proposal from healthcare provider organizations, individual healthcare providers, and the general public. Copies of the comments that we received on the proposal are included in our report as Appendix 2. A number of important issues were raised by the written comments and the comments at the public meeting, and we attempted to incorporate the perspectives and issues that were raised in our data analysis as well. In our analysis of the first criterion listed in the public interest review law, we looked at the following four questions. First, what is current hospital capacity and utilization for psychiatric and chemical dependency services? Second, what evidence is there of a need for new capacity? For example, do patients travel farther for mental health services than for other services? How does the mix of services proposed at the new hospital compare to the services that are needed? And finally, are there alternatives to adding new beds that would serve patients better? As I noted earlier, we collected complete and up-to-date information on mental health beds from all hospitals in Minnesota that have dedicated units, including both community hospitals and state-operated facilities. In total, we counted 1,365 psychiatric beds. This number includes 32 beds that are being added in the Twin Cities Metro in 2008, and we counted 415 chemical dependency beds. This includes 4 beds being added by St. Joseph's Hospital in St. Paul in 2008. This works out to about 29.4 psychiatric beds per 100,000 population in the Twin Cities and 25.8 statewide. I should point out that there are figures in the application for public interest review that compare the number of beds per 100,000 population in Minnesota to national data, and those figures in Minnesota are much, much lower than the totals that we found. We think that is probably an indication that the survey data upon which those figures are based is incomplete, and we think that the count that we have is a much more reliable source of information. It's also important to point out that it's not necessarily the case that Minnesota needs or should aspire to have the same number of mental health beds per population as the national average, which one might also take with a grain of salt given the flaws that we found in that data, that published data for Minnesota. Appendix Table 1 in our report provides detailed information on how many beds are currently being operated and at which hospitals. In terms of how these beds are split out by age group, statewide there are 157 psychiatric beds for children and adolescents, with 91 of these, or 58%, in the Twin Cities Metro. There are 57 chemical dependency beds for adolescents statewide and 27 in the Twin Cities. There are no chemical dependency beds in the state that are designated for children. For adults, there are 1,088 psychiatric beds statewide, with about 69% of this total in the Twin Cities metro area. There are 351 chemical dependency beds, with about one-third of these in the Twin Cities. This next table shows the total volume of inpatient services for psychiatric and chemical dependency care in 2006. About 93% of psychiatric hospital admissions and 80% of chemical dependency admissions occur at community hospitals. However, because of the lengths of stay at the state-operated facilities are on average much longer, when we look at this in terms of the number of days of care, only about two-thirds of the psychiatric days are provided at community hospitals and 38% of chemical dependency days. Next, we analyze how often people who live in different regions of the state travel to receive inpatient psychiatric and chemical dependency care compared to hospitalizations for other conditions. In most of the parts of the state, it is true that people are more likely to travel outside their own region when they're hospitalized for psychiatric or chemical dependency conditions compared to when they are hospitalized for other conditions. So, for example, as shown in this chart, Twin Cities residents are hospitalized in their own region about 90% of the time when they need care for psychiatric or chemical dependency conditions, compared to 97% of the time for other conditions. In other parts of the state, residents are much more likely to travel outside their own region for care, including all hospital care. This is not very surprising in the Northwest, West Central, and Southwest regions, where the closest large cities are in North Dakota and South Dakota. In the central region of Minnesota, people receive care for psychiatric and chemical dependency conditions in their own region only about 60% of the time, and many of those who travel end up receiving care in the Twin Cities. This next chart shows that the picture is similar for children and adolescents as it is for all age groups. The percentage of Twin Cities children and adolescents receiving care in their own region for psychiatric conditions is about 90%, similar to the previous chart that I showed you for all age groups. The percentage receiving care in their own region for chemical dependency is actually about 95%, higher than the 90% for all ages. In greater Minnesota, the percentage of children who travel outside of their own region for psychiatric and chemical dependency care is higher than the average for all age groups, mainly because there is simply not much hospital capacity for child and adolescent mental health services outside of the Twin Cities. Finally, this chart shows the travel patterns by age groups for adults, which is similar to what I've showed you previously for all ages and for children. I mentioned before that many patients from other regions of the state and outside the state travel to the Twin Cities to receive psychiatric and chemical dependency hospital care. For example, in 2006, about 2,000 psychiatric admissions at Twin Cities hospitals, or 11% of the total, were for people who live outside the Twin Cities region. And the same was true for 10% of Twin Cities hospital chemical dependency admissions, which totaled 560 in that year. This slide compares the total number of days of inpatient care provided by hospitals in a region, and this is number of days of care provided to all patients, no matter where they live. It compares it to the total number of days of care provided to residents of a region, including people who received care in their own region and those who traveled outside their region for care. So a number that's greater than zero in this chart means that hospitals provided, in total, more days of care than residents of that region received. In the Twin Cities, hospitals provided about 5,600 more days of psychiatric care than the total number of days of care that region residents received anywhere. In other words, Twin Cities hospitals currently provide a volume of services that exceeds the volume of services that are currently being used by region residents. This suggests that to the degree there is a problem of insufficient hospital capacity, it is not necessarily a problem of insufficient capacity in the Twin Cities, but perhaps in other regions of the state. You can see from this slide that in four regions of the state, Central, Northwest, Southwest, and West Central, hospitals provide fewer total days of psychiatric care than the total days of care needed by region residents, and that's indicated by the bar being below, being a negative number. With the exception of the central region, these areas are in the western part of the state where the closest access to a city is across state lines to North or South Dakota, and where people typically travel for any number of activities in addition to health care. Two other issues that the department considered with regard to the need for the proposed hospital were whether the proposed facility would provide a mix of services that is best suited to meet patient needs, and whether there are alternatives to adding beds to the system that would serve patients better. The proposed hospital would have limited abilities to care for patients who have medical conditions, in addition to mental health conditions that require hospital care. The department received several comments that raised this issue as a concern, and I'll talk about this issue in more detail momentarily in terms of its financial impact on existing hospitals. For the moment, it's just important to note that this limited ability to care for medically complex patients is not an insignificant issue. The data that we use for our analysis indicates that patients hospitalized for psychiatric conditions have at least one non-mental health diagnosis listed about 80% of the time. Now, we don't have any way to tell how much of the time those conditions would preclude the patient from being treated at the proposed hospital, but simply think it is worth noting that the issue is not insignificant. In terms of alternatives to expanding inpatient hospital capacity that might serve patients better, most of you are probably familiar with the 2007 study involving Twin Cities hospitals that tried to document how often people who are hospitalized for psychiatric care could have avoided hospitalization through better access to upfront services like crisis services, and how often hospital stays are unnecessarily prolonged by the lack of appropriate services or facilities to safely discharge the patient. That study estimated that with better availability of these intermediate resources, Twin Cities hospitals could serve over 2,700 additional patients each year without adding any new beds. Now, we're not suggesting that any demonstrated need for beds that exist today should be deferred in the hopes that these type of strategies might work at some point in the future. But it is important to note that the estimated number of additional patients that could be served with existing capacity exceeds the number of patients from the Twin Cities who traveled outside the region to receive hospital care in 2006. I'd also like to note that our conclusion in the study that the scale of the proposed hospital is large relative to documented need is not dependent on the success of these strategies to avoid hospitalizations or to reduce unnecessarily long hospital stays. Moving on to the second criterion for evaluating the proposal, the financial impact on existing hospitals. Many members of this committee may be aware of a public debate that occurred about whether Prairie St. John's could accept Medicaid payment for adult non-elderly patients. This is because a freestanding inpatient mental health hospital with more than 16 beds is considered an institution for mental diseases, or IMD, under federal law, and the state generally is prohibited from receiving federal matching funds for non-elderly adults who are treated at an IMD. However, the Department of Human Services has clarified that this prohibition only applies to Medicaid beneficiaries who are enrolled in the fee-for-service Medicaid program. In addition, DHS currently pays for services provided to these fee-for-service beneficiaries at IMDs with 100% state funds through a program called Program IM. There will be an impact on the state budget when services are paid for with 100% state money instead of receiving federal matching funds, but Prairie St. John's has committed to accepting patients from all payers. One additional concern that has been raised about the proposed hospital's financial impact on existing hospitals has to do with its limited ability to treat medically complex patients. Because the facility would only be able to treat the least complex patients, the average level of complexity of patients who are treated in existing hospital psychiatric and chemical dependency units will rise. And because hospitals are paid a flat fee per admission based on the patient's diagnosis, an increase in the average level of medical complexity of patients served at existing hospitals would likely have a negative financial impact on them. With regard to the ability of existing hospitals to maintain their workforce, it is important to consider this proposal in the broader context of significant mental health professional workforce shortages that exist in Minnesota and in many parts of the nation. 70 of Minnesota's 87 counties are designated mental health professional shortage areas. And although that does not include the Twin Cities, the proposed new hospital would create additional competition for the existing mental health professional workforce in the Twin Cities and in other parts of the state. In previous hospital public interest reviews, MDH has compared the size of the proposed new facility to the total size of hospital capacity in the relevant area as a measure of how significantly the proposal would affect existing hospitals' ability to maintain their workforce. In this case, because the workforce needed at a specialty hospital requires a specific specialized set of skills, we believe that it's most appropriate to compare the proposal to existing inpatient mental health capacity in the Twin Cities. Compared to the number of existing hospital mental health beds in the Twin Cities, the proposal represents an increase of approximately 15% in the total number of beds. This is fairly large, especially when considered in the context of the difficulty that many hospitals have reported in recruiting and retaining mental health professionals. Prairie St. John's indicated that it intends to recruit its workforce for the proposed hospital primarily from out of state, but it is not clear how the new hospital would be so much more successful at attracting mental health professionals from outside of Minnesota than existing hospitals have been. The fourth factor that the department must consider in its review is the degree to which the proposed hospital will provide services to non-paying or low-income patients relative to existing hospitals. This table provides information on charity care, bad debt, and total uncompensated care provided by Minnesota hospitals, Twin Cities hospitals, and by Prairie St. John's at its current specialty psychiatric hospital in Fargo. As a percentage of operating expenses in 2006, Minnesota hospitals incurred about 2% of their operating expenses as uncompensated care, including 0.9% as charity care and 1.1% as bad debt. The best comparison that we were able to make with information provided by Prairie St. John's was 6.9% total uncompensated care, including 0.7% charity care and 6.2% bad debt. I should note that this is not a completely apples comparison for two reasons. First, because Prairie St. John's is in the process of reclassifying some of its bad debt as charity care for 2006. And second, because Prairie St. John's includes discounts provided to self-pay patients as bad debt, while Minnesota hospitals are required to report those discounts separately and not as bad debt. Finally, I spoke earlier about the many personal stories that we heard in the process of doing this review. We heard from patients and families about difficulties getting timely and appropriate mental health care, including long waits in emergency rooms, traveling long distances to be admitted to a hospital, and many other frustrating experiences. We also heard from several rural hospitals that reported receiving many patients from the Twin Cities and many phone calls looking for available beds. From Twin Cities hospitals that currently provide mental health services, we heard concerns about the financial impact of the proposed hospital on them, concerns about the inability of the proposed hospital to care for medically complex patients, and concerns about the impact on their ability to maintain their workforces. Finally, we also heard many comments about the need for an integrated approach to mental health services, including investments in intermediate resources that would reduce the need for hospitalizations and reduce unnecessarily long inpatient stays. We heard from law enforcement and emergency medical services about the burden that transporting patients to distant facilities can place on their budgets and staff resources. And finally, we received several comments about Prairie St. John's as a good corporate citizen and the potential positive economic impact of the proposed hospital on the city of Woodbury. The primary conclusions of our public interest review of this proposal are as follows. First, Minnesota's mental health system does not always serve patients well. Patients do travel long distances, and they do experience long waits for care. The 2007 legislature enacted a major mental health initiative, including investments in crisis services and other activities that are intended to improve the functioning of the entire system. Available evidence does not necessarily indicate insufficient capacity in the Twin Cities. Twin Cities hospitals provided more total days of care in 2006 than the total number of days of care used by region residents. I also noted that there is substantial inflow to the Twin Cities from the central region of the state. Existing Twin Cities hospitals are adding 32 psychiatric beds and 4 chemical dependency beds in 2008, and strategies to increase availability of intermediate resources are believed to have substantial potential to free up additional inpatient capacity. We also found that the scale of the proposal is large relative to documented need. The proposed hospital is designed to serve 3,400 patients per year, growing to 5,100 patients per year after the Phase 2 expansion. There was a total of 2,600 Twin Cities patients who traveled to receive care in 2006. Of these, an estimated 1,400 could be served by the beds that are being added by existing Twin Cities hospitals in 2008. So even if strategies to reduce the need for hospital days through more intermediate resources fail, the scale of the proposed exception to the hospital moratorium is 3 to 4 times the level of documented need. We also found that the hospital's inability to accept medically complex patients is a concern that would likely have a negative impact on existing hospitals. Compared to adding capacity at an existing full-service hospital, the proposal would have a negative impact on the state budget because of the inability to receive federal matching funds for some patients, for Medicaid patients. Finally, to a significant degree, the current lack of timely and appropriate mental health care is driven by workforce shortages, and the proposed hospital is sufficiently large that it would likely have a negative impact on existing hospitals' ability to maintain their staff. To conclude, I do want to go back to the points that I mentioned at the beginning about the chair's request to bring some information about the potential number of inpatient mental health beds that are needed, given that we concluded that the scale of this proposal is too large. Given that there's a fair amount of travel between regions taking place for psychiatric and chemical dependency care, there are a number of ways to look at this problem, and I will briefly summarize two potential approaches. The first would be to assume that travel into the Twin Cities from other regions will continue, and to simply calculate the number of beds that would be needed to greatly reduce or eliminate the number of patients who live in the Twin Cities region who have to travel to other regions to receive care. For children and adolescents living in the Twin Cities, the number of patients who were hospitalized outside the region was 423 for psychiatric care in 2006 and 27 for chemical dependency. Based on the current average length of stay and the 90% occupancy rate, we estimated that an additional 11 psychiatric beds would be needed, and the number of additional chemical dependency bed needed rounds to zero. It's actually about 0.5. For adults, taking into consideration the 32 psychiatric beds and 4 chemical dependency beds that are being added now in the Twin Cities, the estimated number of additional beds that would be required to reduce travel is 7 psychiatric beds and 0 chemical dependency beds. Another strategy to reduce travel would be to add new beds in the central region of the state, since substantial numbers of patients from that region currently travel to the Twin Cities to receive care. Reduced inflow to the Twin Cities from the central region would free up inpatient capacity here to serve additional patients. For children and adolescents, we estimated that it would take about 8 psychiatric beds and 1 chemical dependency bed to substantially reduce travel for patients who live in the central region. That would free up capacity in the Twin Cities so that the estimated need for additional psychiatric beds for children and adolescents would be 2 rather than the 11 I just mentioned, and it would reduce travel for everyone. For adults, using this strategy of adding beds in the central region to reduce travel for both central region and residents of other parts of the state would take an estimated 19 psychiatric beds and 5 chemical dependency beds. In that case, the additional capacity that would be freed up in the Twin Cities is estimated to be sufficient to care for Twin Cities adult patients with no new beds required beyond the ones that are already being added to the system. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have about this report.
Thank you. Representative Bradman, just one second. Let me give an apology to members. Well, I guess I should apologize for my voice. Well, no, one of you, either on this committee or in the body or in the audience, gave me a germ yesterday that I had been doing so well fighting, and it took me down yesterday. My apology to all of you. We had wanted this report prior to today, and this was the earliest NDH could get it to us. Because as you know of our aggressive deadlines that we have, we needed to figure out how to make sure there'd be time to have this heard. This committee passes all of the bills into the overall Health and Human Service Policy Committee. Usually we just pass them through Representative Chiefson's committee and see where they need to go. However, this bill, if it gets out of the committee today in any form, will most likely be heard in Representative Chiefson's committee, and wanting to make sure that we had enough time to set that for that agenda in his committee so that that dialogue could happen. And so, again, I apologize because I know some members are like, well, we just got the report in front of us. What are we supposed to do? Hopefully, we'll figure it out by the end of the day, because it is my very intention to have some form of action on it, pass with recommendation, pass without recommendation, not pass or tabled, but there will be some form of action today. Representative Gratley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It wasn't me that gave you the bug. Just fine. Ms. Bonier, I just have a couple of questions. It seems like you're saying we need more psychiatrists and we need more community care so we don't have the prolonged stays and the preventable admissions. Do you believe that while the governor is cutting health care, there will be any cuts to mental health? And then beyond that, what is the department doing to address those three issues?
Ms. Sonier, I don't know if you can answer that or if you need someone from DHS to answer that.
I think we need someone from DHS to answer that question.
Commissioner Koester, can you mind coming on down? We might even have a prize for you. You get down here. You know it. Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning. My name is Wes Koester from the Department of Human Services.
You sound like you had it too, Commissioner.
Yes, ma'am, I do. May I leave now? Madam Chair, Representative Griley, I don't believe that the decisions on the budget have been made at this time. I don't believe the governor's budget's been released, so I can't address to what extent the forecast is going to impact mental health treatment. I will say that, as was mentioned, that we received $35 million of new money for mental health that was passed by this legislature last session, and we're in the process of issuing those grants that cross a number of community infrastructure needs. So we're hopeful that, certainly hopeful that that's going to improve the mental health system in Minnesota. It was less than what we had requested. That's still a greater amount than I think has been appropriated as new money mental health in the history of Minnesota. So we feel good about those new resources. But I'm not aware of any planned reductions that are specific to mental health at this time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then, Mr. Quakra, the staff shortage. What are you doing about that? Because it seems to me we're dealing with a solution here when we just talked about what the solutions would be, having more psychiatrists, having more community care, and so that people can have earlier intervention and not have to stay beyond their stay when they have no place to go. And so we're looking at an imperfect solution of more beds because we haven't done those three things, and then the question is, can we staff those? And I'm hopeful with the higher salaries that I think they have at Prairie St. John that they could attract someone from out of state, but if not, then the crisis gets worse and we have to do something about it. And that's the real problem, not this discussion today. So I'm delighted with this discussion today because it forces those other issues.
Representative Brown, Commissioner, before you respond, just quickly for myself, I want to thank you for that. Mm-hmm. This would have been one of the frustrations the last couple months after this great bill and the great work that individuals and organizations, members here, put together and passed all of the legislation that we did around mental health. It would have been nice to know, I mean, we knew that we needed more doctors, but it should have been more of a priority with the package that we were passing last year, whether it was the loan forgiveness or any other method to attract doctors, individuals to go into the field. But it kind of fell off. It wasn't a priority really being pushed by anyone in particular, which is sad because we had an opportunity there. Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Griley, we did included in the package of last year and the prior year was an increase in rates. Now, this has a limited, I think, effect on it, but it does have effect with what we were being told was that it's very hard for providers to provide mental health services through psychiatry and other clinicians when they're losing money on every unit of service. There's not much of an incentive to expand services in that way. So there was a significant increase for rates towards psychiatry and other professionals. I believe it was between 23% and 24%. But you are absolutely right in the sense that we need to do more in terms of this in this state as far as attracting more psychiatrists and I would agree also with Madam Chair in the sense that we have to have a variety of strategies to do that, and we do not have those employed yet, and I would also agree that if this was if the issue was around the recommendation for Prairie St. John's, just around the shortage of psychiatry, it would really be a sad single reason not to look at this. I think that the Department of Health has talked about a number of reasons that they base their recommendations on, but the shortage of psychiatry certainly shouldn't be a single reason, because as you state, it's something we have to address regardless of whether this particular facility is built or not. I would add one more issue, that we are impacted by that as a state provider. Not long ago, I believe we have been able to recruit and hire another psychiatrist, but I believe we had 36 beds unserviced as a result of not being able to staff those beds with the clinical expertise that we needed. So we feel as a provider, not only as a administrator of policy in the state.
Representative Brown, do you have anything else?
Not at the moment. I'm sure I'll have more later.
Commissioner, Representative Brown brought up another point when she first started talking about community collaborative, especially with the emphasis on that. We want to figure out how to work with communities to prevent some of the crises. And I'm not sure if you know offhand or if you need to get back to us. I'm interested in knowing, you know, my county has decided to cut or eliminate many community contracts, whether they are culturally specific or something else, because some of it is because of the anticipation with the TCM cut. Some of it is other reasons why they're having budget difficulties, and it's just easier to cut contracts versus cutting paid staff. Wanting to know what the department's leadership is going to be around that.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I will have to get back to you, because I've not been involved in a discussion of that. I will, on the issue of culturally competent service and provision, there was some funds, again, as part of the mental health initiative, that were appropriated to our department to better develop those services. It wasn't a great deal of money, but it's certainly a start. And as to your specific question, I'm not acquainted with the issue. I apologize. We'll get back to you.
Thank you for that. Any other questions? Ms. Thornier, I have another question. On the full report on page 27, you include the Brainerd facility, so we know for sure we'll not have those beds. How does that deduction equate into your calculation?
Madam Chair, that's in the appendix table, I believe. I'm looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we took those beds out in the child and adolescent count, and it is an error that we did not take them out for the adults. But those are chemical dependency beds. We would have to, it looks like 60 are currently staffed, and out of a total 96 that could be staffed. We would have to go back and take a look at that, but I don't believe it would affect the conclusion that we reached in this report.
Okay. Seeing no other questions at this time, Ms. Senior, thank you for your testimony. Don't go far. Representative Swells. Members, Representative Drew, do you mind moving the minute?
No, thank you, Madam. Move the minute.
Thank you. Members, have you looked at it? Any corrections that need to be made? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against? Minutes are approved. Yes. Representative Bryling, would you be so kind to move Representative Swell's bill?
I would be delighted. I will move. House File 3539, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bryling. Representative Swells, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am very happy to be here today to present House File 3539, a bill which will address a major shortfall in our health care system, a lack of timely access to inpatient mental health services. Mental illness is the most common illness that afflicts Minnesotans. In its most serious forms, mental illness can lead to death. We've seen reports in the media recently of where this has happened. Most recently, it was Northern Illinois University. In December, it was at a shopping mall in Omaha and at a church in Colorado Springs. But it's also here in Minnesota. last fall. It was in a home in Shoreview where a mentally ill man stabbed his mother to death before killing himself. It was in Mankato where a naked, mentally ill man running around in zero-degree weather was shot and killed by police after they said he threatened them with a knife. The next day, his brother was quoted in the media as saying, "Why did they have to kill him? He wasn't ill. He was mentally ill." More often, the onset of a mental illness doesn't make the headlines or the 10 o'clock news. It's something that individuals and families quietly suffer with. Let me tell you about one of those people, a 16-year-old constituent of mine. Mary, I'll call her, attempted suicide just before Christmas in 2006. Fortunately, her parents found her before she died, and she was revived. However, when they and the physician sought to have their daughter admitted for treatment, just like the Mary in the Bible, there was no room at the inn. Mary was eventually admitted to a hospital, but not in my district, not in my county, not in the seven-county metro area. She was admitted to a hospital in Duluth for treatment of her suicidal urges and depression, hours and many miles away from her family. So it's Christmas, and Mary is in Duluth by herself because her parents, who don't make a lot of money, can't afford to take time off from work to travel to Duluth and stay in a hotel with their daughter. Merry Christmas. Welcome to the experience of a mentally ill family in the Twin Cities. Members, if Mary's experience was a one-time event, I wouldn't be here today with this bill. But Mary is not the exception. Mary's experience is typical for too many patients in the metro area that need care but can't access it when they need it. Members, this isn't news to you. You spent hearing after hearing last session listening to parents and patients and their parents and their loved ones tell you their stories. Care denied, care delayed, patients kicked out of hospital emergency rooms only to be arrested and strapped into a straitjacket. Care offered, but only after sitting in the emergency room for 24 or 48 hours or 72 hours before being shipped by ambulance at $15,000 a ride to Duluth, to Rochester, to New Ulm, to Brainerd, to Wilmer, to Sioux Falls, to Fargo, to Madison, and yes, even to Winnipeg. That, members, is the wrong care delivered in the wrong place at the wrong time. We can do better, and that's why I'm here today. The population of the Twin Cities is growing. 3 million metro residents are in sight. The Minnesota Council of Health Plans issued a study recently that reports that 1 in 10 Minnesotans will need mental health care services at some point in their lives. What has been the response of the inpatient mental health providers to the growing need for beds? They've cut the number of beds available to patients. They've invested instead in cancer centers, cardiac centers, and other high-profit operations. We hear about a medical arms race in health care. Members, in the mental health care area, we're experiencing a unilateral disarmament. That's why I am carrying this bill. In a moment, I'll turn things over to Dr. Stephen Sutterberg of Prairie St. John's, but I'd like to make one final comment. I have not carried a health bill before. As you know, I'm an educator, and education policy is a priority for me. But when I heard about the opportunity to expand access to mental health services in Washington County, one of the fastest growing counties in the state, a county without a single hospital bed dedicated to provide care to mentally ill and or chemically dependent children and adults, I jumped at this chance. Members, you know how sometimes a group will come to you and ask you to carry a bill. Well, this time, when I heard that a bill needed to be circulated by Prairie St. John's, I jumped at the chance to carry it. I feel strongly about correcting the deficit in our mental health system, and I am passionate about this bill. That is why I am upset and angry to learn that the opponents of this bill, and you'll hear from them shortly, have had to resort to distortions and, quite frankly, lies about Prairie St. John's. No doubt you've heard these stories over the past few weeks. These are some of the lies that you've heard. Prairie St. John's Hospital won't serve kids on medical assistance. No, they'll serve kids, but they won't serve adults on medical assistance. yesterday, one of our colleagues got an email with a new one. They'll serve kids and adults, but not seniors, a medical assistant. I've also heard that Prairie St. John's won't serve uninsured patients. Have you? How about Prairie St. John's isn't open on nights or weekends? Well, the health department report has some big problems that I find troubling. At least the department didn't include these distortions as justifications for opposing the project. These distortions, which frankly I didn't expect to hear from some of our major healthcare institutions, really upset me. The position that we don't want to expand to serve more mentally ill patients, but we want Prairie St. John's to serve them, don't want them to serve them either, is disturbing. We deserve better from our big health care systems, especially when they have tens of millions of dollars in profits, can afford to pay their leaders million-dollar salaries, and in one case can afford to spend $175 million to build a new children's hospital that will duplicate existing pediatric services already available at Minneapolis Children's instead of collaborating jointly to build a world-class children's hospital. If they can afford to expand services for oncology and cardiology and other high-margin services, then they should have the ability to afford to serve the patients that are currently warehousing in their emergency rooms instead of shipping them hundreds of miles away. For years and years, hospital inpatient mental health capacity has been flat or declining while our population and demand for mental health services are growing. Now the Department of Health tells us that we don't need to add any beds now because in theory we won't need them in the future if and when the state invests the millions of dollars it doesn't have to fund the programs we haven't funded over the past 20 years. My final comment, members, is to thank you for your willingness to serve on this division. Mental health is not a sexy issue. This isn't a bonding committee or a tax committee. You're not here because of big projects you're going to deliver for your district. You're not here because we have an oversupply of mental health services in Minnesota, and you're going to work to fix that problem. You're here because of your understanding that our mental health system is not working and our constituents suffer from mental illness deserve to receive care close to home, just the same as if they had cancer or a car accident or having a baby. Maybe you're here because of family members. Maybe you're here because of a neighbor's experience or a friend from church or work. I'm here today because of a 16-year-old girl in my district who attempted suicide at Christmas time in 2006 and couldn't get the care she needed. This bill will help the married in Washington County and the broader Twin Cities community have better access to care they need, and I would appreciate your support. I would like to have members, these individuals, to join me now at the table. Dr. Steve Sederberg and Dr. Shalene Kennedy, two board-certified child psychiatrists from Prairie St. John's, and they will share their vision for expanding mental health care services. Again, thank you, members, and Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wells. I will say, regardless of the fate that your bill has today in this committee, as an educator, I hope you carry another health bill. All the merrier. Good morning. Members, I will say we are going to have questions after each testifier instead of calling them back up. So if there is something that you want to know to clarify, please don't hesitate. Good morning. If you can identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Wales, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of our proposal to increase psychiatric inpatient capacity in Minnesota. My name is Dr. Steven Sederberg, and I'm co-chairman at Prairie St. John's. If we had several hours, the scientists and me would prefer to address every element in the blizzard of numbers just presented by Ms. Honier. On the other hand, I always remember what one of my more blunt mentors at Columbia University said to me when I proudly showed her my first research paper. "My," she said, "you've managed to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear." Sometimes we adore our numbers more than they deserve. In the end, it's more important for you to hear real people talk about real experiences in real life. So I'll be brief and limit myself to just one methodologic comment, and then ask John Ryan, who authored our own analysis of inpatient needs, to go over some brief fact checks before we move on quickly, really, to the most reliable data of the morning, namely people's actual experiences. In my opinion, the entire MDH report collapses logically when its conclusions are held up against the American Hospital Association data that it dismisses hastily on page 7. These data show Minnesota to be shamefully behind in per capita psychiatric bed capacity at 60% of the national average. MDH points to unreliability in these data resulting from underreporting of bed capacity. Unreliability sounds like a reason to throw out the comparison, but unreliability due to underreporting really means that 60% is most likely an overestimate of how well Minnesota stacks up. What an inconvenient truth for the rest of the report. Did they simply miss this, or was the report tailored to a preconceived conclusion? There's also a remarkably arrogant comment to the effect that even if 60% is correct, who can say Minnesota needs to measure up to national standards? Is our brilliance so unique in the nation? Are we the only ones exploring alternatives to hospitalization? Have we already solved our problems? I urge you to listen to the people who need help and don't get it. Their stories are the indisputable facts. Our opponents will subsequently attempt to distract you from these stories. You can't get elected without an instinct for what matters to real people. Please trust your instincts on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the tape. Member, I'm sorry, were there any questions? Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Ryan. I'm the Special Project Liaison for Prairie St. John's. And I just wanted to touch briefly on a few points, and we'd like to take most of the time to have consumers give their own personal experiences. But one of the largest conclusions that the MDH report draws is that the scale is large relative to the documented need. And that documented need omits all of the patients who sit and wait in emergency rooms and then decide to go home. They're never admitted to a hospital. They're never transferred to a hospital. They're not part of the data set. It omits all the people who've experienced the shortcomings in our mental health system once or twice or three times already and decide never to even show up at an emergency room. It doesn't account for the returning vets that will return shortly with post-traumatic stress disorder and other mental health concerns that need to be addressed. Another comparison that is made is to our charity care. And I've included in your packets our charity care for 2004, 2005, as well as an uncompensated care comparison for 2006, which was the only data set made available to us. Our 2004 and 2005 charity care rates are some of the best when compared to Twin Cities hospitals. In 2005, our charity care rate was third best, and the same is true in 2004. Our 2006 data is a bit troubling. We did a very bad job of classifying charity care as such, and it all got put into the uncompensated care, and that is what Director Sonier addressed when we said that we're going back and looking and re-examining our attribution of that uncompensated care to charity care. But the conclusion to draw is that we do a tremendous amount of charity care, of uncompensated care, to the citizens that we serve. And I'd also like to go through just briefly to talk about the 2007 legislative initiatives. First off, the amount funded in 2007 was about half of what advocates argued was needed. And while we support all efforts to improve mental health care, people should not be asked to suffer needlessly, die, or on the altar of marginally funded experiments no matter how enamored of the experiment its architect may be. What we've aimed to provide is something that is reliably going to save lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Doctor?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Dr. Shalane Kennedy. I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist. I work in the Twin Cities area. I was trained at Mayo Clinic and University of Minnesota, and I am the face of the front lines of the physicians that treat your Minnesota children.
Did you say your name?
Shalane.
Thank you.
Sure. Kennedy.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'm on the front lines. I'm the I'm most valuable commodity right now in medicine, and oftentimes it comes up that cloning is a possibility, but not a reality. These families to me are not statistics. I really look at the Minnesota Department of Health's conclusions, and I'm horrified. These are real people, and personally, I don't feel that it reflects the reality. I work at Boys Totem Town, which is a correctional facility. I work at Gillette Children's Hospital, where there are medically complex children. I work with basically all of the children that other people do not want to deal with. I take MA because I think it's the right thing to do. I do pro bono work because I think it's the right thing to do. When everybody else in my profession is now turning to private pay because insurance companies have become too difficult to work with. When Trey St. John's approached me about being a part of their partial hospital program in Woodbury, I was already way too busy. I didn't need any other work. But I thought it was the right thing to do because there are so few services at that level of care for our children, particularly on the East Metro. I consider myself, with my training and my experience and three of my four children being special needs, to be particularly skilled in treating severely behaviorally disturbed kids. And I feel qualified to say when they do need inpatient treatment. I'd like to paint a picture for you of these faces, of the reality of who suffers with the inpatient bed shortage. These are not exceptions. These are not people I had to dig through files to find. These are ones that come off of the top of my head because I've seen them within the last few weeks to few months. In fact, I could give you seven examples in the last 9 working days of children that should have but did not get hospitalized, two of which I saw in consultation in the healthy system, and one of which, in my opinion, was discharged prematurely from the Fairview system. An 11-year-old, 200-pound child was in my office who suffers from bipolar disorder. Mother brought him in urgently after having gone 6 times within the last several months to the emergency room, having to sit and being told that her child would have to go out of state in order to be hospitalized. She couldn't and wouldn't do that as a single mom with other children. She came to my office urgently to see if there was anything I could do. The child became acutely agitated while we were discussing what he had done, how he had destroyed his mother's home, and proceeded to destroy my office. I have a hole in my wall. I have a shattered porcelain large figurine of a dog. He threatened myself, my nurse, his mother, and wanted to kill himself. We called 911, and it was all we could do to have 5 people come from different floors of my building to help hold him. My nurse called. There were no beds available. It was no longer an option for mother to say she didn't want him hospitalized and he had to be taken out of state. Not long ago, I was phoned by a mother of a 17-year-old, 300-pound, developmentally disabled, paranoid child who thought that she was poisoning him. This 300-pound child kicked her in the chest and she was fearful that she had a broken rib. His brothers were holding him and they were waiting for 911. I, of course, directed them to the emergency room. The next morning, I received a call from her. She was still in the emergency room. She was in pain and feeling very frustrated, but yet was not willing to send her child out of state. She stated that her child just wouldn't understand. He would be terrified without her. There was no way she could do it and still keep her job and keep her children safe. There was no one else to take care of them. We began to talk about Prairie St. John's in case. The next day, day three, I received a phone call from the emergency room. She couldn't take it anymore. She decided to give in and go to Prairie St. John's. She did, and she said it was, quote, the best decision she ever made in her life. Once he was sent, she received medical attention for what was a broken rib. And now the most horrific situation, which is actually the most common, is when I receive a phone call that a child has a severe behavioral problem, perhaps suicidal, perhaps they've attacked a family member. Most recently, a mom had her arm slashed with a knife. And parents were unwilling, again, to send their child out of the metro area or out of state. But reluctantly, they decided they needed to take this child home. They couldn't wait any longer. I have not seen statistics on these children, but these are the most common instances that happened, not the ones that make it to the ER, not the ones that make it inpatient. I wish that that data were included, because I think that would be a much more accurate representation of what's really going on. So what happens when this child goes home? I get the phone call. I have to try and treat a child that I haven't even seen within the last week, month, 3 months, that's now in acute crisis. Would it be okay to send a heart attack victim or a stroke victim home in a crisis? Why is it okay? This is why I think, personally, that there's a shortage in community-based care. Who is willing to do my job? Many people get burnt out. It's frustrating. It's poor medicine. It's scary. This burden is often not able to be tolerated. Anyone who states that we do not need more psychiatric beds obviously does not personally bear the burden of this. I know I am burnt out. I know my nurse is too. My understanding is that greater than 500 beds would be needed in order to just get us up to the national average. When I speak with my colleagues, they say, why isn't Prairie St. John's asking for more beds? More beds than they've actually asked for. Community-based care is a lovely idea, and I really do think someday in our utopia that we may actually get to, we will have that. But this idea has been around since the 60s and 70s. I was recently at the Ministry of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry meetings, and we were revealed that these ideas have been going on since then. We need relief now. If other facilities worry about losing staff to Prairie St. John, I believe they need to examine why staff would actually want to leave. In general medical facilities, psychiatry is treated like the bad stepchild. Providers aren't paid as much. They're not treated as well. The facilities are not as good. Beds are closing. We have a smaller profit margin. You don't see deficits in cancer care and cardiology. A hospital through Prairie St. John's, I feel, would raise the standards of the other facilities in the region and perhaps would actually attract more physicians to this area as those standards were raised. I am also frankly shocked from personal experience that other facilities fear that they may actually get the more higher complexity medical patients. This has simply not been my experience. When my direct patients are routinely turned away for their medical needs, for as little as needing a catheterization to urinate every few hours, or needing fluid pushed into a feeding tube every few hours. Prairie St. John's has been willing to work with me and assures me that if they get a hospital facility, I will have some high-level nursing care to be able to take care of my patients from Gillette and other areas that need to go there. The question of not currently taking MA at our partial hospital program has come up. It is not that Prairie St. John's won't accept MA. It's that MA cannot accept Prairie St. John's because we don't have a hospital facility within, I believe it's a 60-mile radius. So you know what Prairie St. John's has done for me, my MA patients and unfunded patients? Whenever I have asked, they have taken the child on pro bono. In my opinion, Pray St. John holds themselves to the same high ethical standards that I do. I know that they know this is not the end-all solution. I believe they want to be committed to part of the mental health care, to solving at least part of the mental health care crisis, and I see it in many ways. A few are already happening. They're working on free early identification computer problems in the schools. They have asked me to go out, even though there's no way for them to get reimbursed, to go out and educate pediatricians and primary care providers to make them more secure with using these medications, to make them more comfortable with it. And I believe it's made a tremendous difference to those that I've been able to outreach. But I'm just one.
Dr. Kennedy, I'm sorry. We have been short with time, if you could wrap up for us.
Yep, this is my final thing. The relief is desperately needed now. Without more beds, I strongly feel we will lose even more community providers. And if we do get more beds, I think we may actually be able to attract more providers because there is backup. I beg for your approval on behalf of the providers that we have. If today it was your family in a mental health care crisis, I am certain that that is what you would want. This is the help we need now. It is the right thing to do now.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. I'm going to move the two consumers up before Ms. Opium and Mr. Hertzbecker, if you don't mind. If we could have Clayton, I don't have a last name, and Mr. Bailey, come up. Good morning. If you could say your name for our tape.
My name is Clayton Litchfield, and Madam Chairman, and good morning to all of the committee. My name is Clayton Litchfield, and I live in nearby Eagan, Minnesota. I didn't really want to use my last name because it's kind of sensitive, but to not say anything is kind of like not caring for people who have mental health concerns. If I came to a hospital with a broken leg or cancer, it would be just fine with everyone, but mental health issues are still not given the support and acceptance of other medical problems. A little over a year ago, I was involved in an intervention where we needed to take my wife to the hospital because of a psychiatric problem. We went to Fairview because it was the only hospital in town admitting. We arrived at the ER at 9:15 a.m., got right in, very friendly and helpful. At 9:45, we were admitted to the ER room, met with a doctor and social worker, and were evaluated. Began waiting for a room upstairs. We waited until 7:30 p.m. During this time, inquiries were made with the response being, it'll just be another hour. When we were taken upstairs, we were subjected to another 45 minutes of admitting. And during this time, there was no food or medication provided for the entire day. It was 8:30 p.m. before she was admitted to the unit for the first time. That's 11 hours. There seemed to be no one in charge. It was not clean. Staff was disorganized. Patients coming and going, strapped in, out of control. Custodial service tripping over one another. The place was in total chaos. They did not want us to leave, as it would be against doctor's orders, but suggestions came that maybe we should go home and come back tomorrow. It was at this point that I was not going to allow my wife to be placed in the care of such people, and we arrived home at 10 o'clock. Well, I don't know all the issues with hospitals in Minnesota. I know this is not right. People should be able to get help when they need it. And people dealing with mental health problems are just as important as anybody else. I thought this might be an anomaly. However, in reviewing this with a number of physicians and psychiatrists, I've been told, if anything, it's gotten worse. My real rude awakening is when I testified at one of these hearings before. And when meeting with other people that had been trying to navigate the system, their response was, "What are you complaining about? We waited in the hall for 3 days. I don't even feel, with my story, I'm even qualified for this because there's so many people in much worse and have navigated so many other things that are worse than what I have. And I thought mine was terrible." Please support the Prairie St. John request to open a mental health hospital in Woodbury. Hurting people need it. By the way, our insurance company paid $2,836 for this day. We need some help, people. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Litchfield. I appreciate that and coming to share your personal life. Mrs. Bailey.
Good morning. My name is Eleanor Bailey. I live in St. Paul. I'm here today because of the lack of psychiatric beds in the metro area, particularly for adolescent patients, and to ask for legislative approval of the proposed psychiatric hospital in Woodbury. Unfortunately, my family has been affected by mental illness, most recently my granddaughter, who is now 13. She has been in need of psychiatric care for the last 2 years. She's been hospitalized several times in the Twin City area in medical beds, sometimes never seeing either a psychiatrist or a psychologist during her stay. Insurance companies have paid a lot for these stays, which in essence did nothing for her underlying mental condition. Last fall, she was hospitalized at Prairie St. John's Hospital in Fargo. I couldn't believe that she was hospitalized so far away, because there wasn't a bed available in the Twin Cities. For the first time, she was studied, given appropriate treatment, and is receiving follow-up care in Woodbury. She is now in school and able to be a normal 14-year-old. Several years ago, a different grandchild was sent to Duluth because there is an adolescent treatment center there. They are not available at that time in the metro area. These situations cause great stress on the family because of the inability to visit without losing time from work. They cause additional stress to the child, who feels abandoned by the family. A safe psychiatric hospital in Woodbury would facilitate earlier and appropriate treatment for adolescent patients, benefiting not only them, but the community, and using the insurance health care dollars for appropriate treatment. I strongly urge you to approve of the building of Prairie St. John's Hospital. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate your testimony. Mr. Hersberger, we're going to put Ms. Opium on hold only because there's a letter that you do have, and if we have time, we'll have her up, because I know she does want to share something with us this morning. Thank you, and can I identify yourself for the tape?
Madam Chair, I'm Eric Hirschberg. I'm a sergeant with the Anoka County Sheriff's Office, and I have supervised, among other things, with the Sheriff's Office since 2000, the Sheriff's Transport Unit. That transport unit is responsible for, amongst other things, transporting mentally ill patients to the Anoka County Courthouse for hearings, as well as inter-facility transfers. And in regard to brevity, I had a letter from James D. Franklin, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. I have a copy of that, but I will not read it, if that is okay. As I said, I started as a supervisor for the transport unit in 2000. And in as early as 2001, the Anoka County Sheriff's Office recognized the growing problem with patients that were diverted from our community that required the Sheriff's Office to return those patients. And I recall November of 2001 doing a memo to my captain explaining the problem that we had accomplishing transports when we had patients both in our community hospitals, in the metro hospitals, as well as that time, I believe we included St. Peter and Hutchinson. And at that time, that was a remarkable burden on us. The problem has snowballed since 2001. I don't have a great deal of numbers or statistics with me. I can certainly provide them. but I just wanted to read a couple additional memos that I've done over the years to captains in my division. I've worked for, I think I've worked for four or five different captains. I've been there ever since. I guess I write these memos when things come up. These are not anomalies, but these are just when I have an opportunity to sit down and provide my supervisors with a bit of a accounting of what's going on in my unit. I look back to a memo I did on September 5th of 2007, and it explains that on Tuesday, August 23rd, 2007, two Anoka County deputies were required to leave Anoka at 4 in the morning to go to Fargo to pick up the patient. I have the patient's name in my memo, obviously I will not read that. I was informed right around noon that the patient and the deputies were getting very close to being back to Anoka. So my deputies left at 4 in the morning, very close to noon, they're almost back. I was then told by court staff that the doctor who would be required to speak with that patient wasn't going to be there. So the patient came back to the Anoka County Courthouse, spent a few hours, talked to her court-appointed attorney, and was taken back to Fargo, only to have to be returned at a later point in time. In May 23rd, 2007, I did another memo, basically the same thing. We required six deputies working in two deputy teams to go to the locations of Mercy and Coon Rapids, Unity and Fridley, HCMC, the Minnesota Security Hospital in St. Peter, and Worthington. I counted these six deputies in two, three deputy teams, and we always have two deputies transporting a group of patients. This resulted in the sheriff's office on that one day traveling 656 miles and spending 45 hours of staff time that one day to accomplish mental health hearings. This happens to be my most recent memo. Wednesday, February 27th, just the other day, again, six deputies are needed to accomplish mental health transport. Three two-deputy transport teams. Two deputies left at 4 in the morning to go to Fargo. Two deputies left at 4 in the morning to go to Worthington. And two other deputies started at 7 so they could make the pickup at Mission Detox and at Mercy. Again, this accounted for the sheriff's office traveling on this one day, 903 miles, spending 48 and a half hours of time to accomplish one day of mental health. We really want to make the point that this is not the only 3 days since 2007, or correction, since 2001 that this has happened. These just happened to be the days that I took the time to sit down and do the calculations and pull from our transport logs. But I do know in 2007, we went numerous times to Annandale and St. Peter and Cold Spring and Wadena and New Ulm and Mankato and Cambridge and St. Cloud and Rochester and Hibbing and Austin and Owatonna and Marshall and Worthington and Wilmer and Fargo. Those are just the locations from 2007. I don't have a total of miles we drove, but this is a significant impact to the Anoka County Sheriff's Office. In 2001, we began internal meetings to see if there was anything we could do. It took us a lot of hours to determine there was nothing we could do inside Anoka County. We had several other meetings over the years, and recently a group pulled together by former director Becky Fink at RISE in Anoka in Spring Lake Park. And again, after hours of meetings numerous times, Becky finally came up with the statement that we've spent a lot of time admiring the problem. Nobody at the table ever had a solution, ever. I've seen this problem grow and grow. I've never heard of a solution offered. So when I was contacted and informed that there was a potential solution and beds being opened up in Woodbury compared to Fargo or Marshall or Worthington, on behalf of the Anoka County Sheriff's Office, the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, and the residents of Anoka County, who I am paid to take care of, I see this as a great opportunity.
Thank you, Sergeant, for your comments. Members, the letter that he was referring to from the Minnesota Association for Sheriffs is in your packet.
Oh, great.
Thank you. We're going to keep moving along. Mr. I'm going to butcher your name, Gesterman? 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 And Dr. Cardew, if you could come up also. We have Dr. Cardew. Thank you. You can identify yourself for the case.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to testify on behalf of Regents Hospital. My name is Tom Gesterman. I'm the Vice President for Behavioral Health Services at Regents Hospital in St. Paul. Regents Hospital is committed to a long-term community-based approach to improve access to mental health services for all patients in our community. Regents is one of the largest providers of inpatient mental health services in the East Metro. We have approximately 96 beds that provide inpatient services. We just recently opened 15 of those beds. We were 80 beds before. Just recently opened those beds. One of the things that we have seen increasingly is that we have folks that have medical complexities. We've gone from approximately 14% of our patients that are behavioral health patients needing medical conditions that require intensive hospital medical services to up to 23% this last year. The addition of these beds that we have provide medical services as well as psychiatric services. The emergency department at Regents sees about 6,000 mental health patients every year. About 2,000 of those end up needing to be hospitalized. In addition, we also provide, so the more acute services that we have, Regents also partners with in developing community-based services. Regents operates Hovander Safe Health Safe Alternatives, which are community-based, less restrictive alternatives that provide an outlet for our inpatient units. Those are currently running at 95% of their capacity, as well as our psychiatric units run at 95 to 98% capacity. Regents also supports EMAC, which is the East Metro Adult Crisis Service Stabilization Team, with both administrative services, funding, and then also recently partnered with the other Metro hospitals in the St. Paul Bigelow Foundation to create a new psychiatric medication access program to provide medications for those individuals who lack access. Questions have been asked about capacity for inpatients. It is an issue in the East Metro. We have seen our ED every day, the need for additional mental health services. We believe the expansion of inpatient capacity in the East Metro should be fully integrated with the continuum of care for persons with mental illness, that the new capacity must be available to all persons, regardless of their third-party care. One point of clarity, there's a document that's been circulated that implies, it was distributed today, it implies that we are supportive of this particular project. What we are supportive of is additional beds that are fully integrated with medical services. Our commitment to patients is on a mind and body commitment. Our commitment is to the community serving all patients, and our commitment is to long-term community-based strategies. One of the things that Regents specifically sees as a desired need of the community is more intermediate levels of care. The hospital, existing hospital facilities, we do have a concern about the model that the new facility proposed to have a negative impact on Regents' ability to recruit and maintain staff. Specifically, we have concerns that this facility would recruit providers from existing facilities, increasing the shortage of psychiatric providers in full-service hospitals. Psychiatric services are desperately needed in our community, and any model that would remove access to these services from the emergency department that would place a hardship on our community. One of the opportunities we do have, and which Regents as well as Health Park, as well as Hennepin County Medical Center, we do co-sponsor one of the three psychiatric residency programs will be adding approximately 4 more residency slots next year as a result of the continued need for psychiatric services. The question of whether the proposed hospital will provide the same level of service to uninsured and government program enrollees at existing facilities, and will they be impacted? The inability of this hospital to serve all Medicaid patients with medical concerns creates an undue burden onto Regents Hospital as well as other facilities that provide full service. How would this proposed hospital impact emergency departments in existing hospitals? The proposed hospital would not be a full-service emergency department. That falls short of the current community standards for hospital services. Because of this proposed hospital, it would not relieve pressure on the existing emergency departments. It is unclear whether the proposed facility will accept patients 24/7, and in fact, the inability of the proposed hospital to serve patients that have serious medical needs may increase resources and demands on the existing emergency departments and emergency transport in the area. To summarize, inpatient expansion and behavioral health should be done where physical and mental health care can be fully integrated. New expansions should be able and should be available and accepting all patients regardless of payer source and conditions. We need investments in community-based options. East Metro planning groups have all agreed on this fundamental principle and are working to develop those. Thank you for the opportunity to provide this information here. Regents also sent comments to the Department of Health in preparation for this public interest review. We take seriously our commitment to behavioral health and will continue to work with the long-term investment needs for improved care for this vulnerable population at the hospital as well as in the community.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Knight.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Kathy Knight, and I have 15 years direct care experience as a registered nurse in the military and in this community. And I'm currently the Vice President of Fairview Behavioral Services. Fairview supports the Department of Health recommendation on the proposal. I wish to briefly discuss 3 points. Right level of care. Recently, we completed a 6-week study. 42 children and adolescents were held in locked acute inpatient psychiatric wards at Fairview for days and sometimes weeks longer than was most appropriate for their needs. This experience is replicated across adult and all current inpatient bed services. This was wrong for those 42 kids and for all the others. Once acute care needs have been met, patients with mental illness should not be housed or warehoused in hospitals, but should be afforded access to the right level of care, support, and living conditions. Anything else is substandard care and dehumanizing. That access would resolve as mid-level service needs are met. Second point, providers. Status. The number one reason patients have been deferred from Fairview's beds is lack of providers. Beds have been closed for months at a time. It is simply unrealistic to believe recruitment will come solely out of state when salaries exceed current market and acuity is lower. Nonprofits already struggling will close more beds with further provider erosion. It was provider loss that closed the child adolescent beds at Mercy Hospital in Anoka. Acuity and cost. The for-profit model does little to meet the needs of the most complex and costly cases. The mentally ill and homeless, detox requiring medical support, long-term care, psychiatric and medically complex. On our medical unit in 07, we added 4,075 shifts of one-to-one uncompensated care to address med psych management. In a recent 7-state study, it was found that mentally ill patients with medical illness died on average 25 years earlier of their medical illnesses than those without mental illness. We need to integrate care, not further silo mental illness from general health. Fairview does not support the status quo. Quite to the contrary, hospital beds in traditional psychiatric units are the status quo. In conclusion, We believe the for-profit proposal will not remedy the already vulnerable mental health infrastructure, but will further destabilize it. We believe resources must be directed toward the real root causes of access issues as a means of creating transformational, integrative solutions for the mentally ill. Many good things are beginning to happen in Minnesota based on the legislation that passed last year around integrated care, early intervention, and care for the chronically mentally ill. Let's not go backwards. Fairview has been committed to creativity and innovation. We opened a behavioral emergency center a couple of years ago. This was not done to increase our profits. Believe me, it has not had that impact. Our hospital units are receiving higher acuity and longer lengths of stay, and definitely a decreased profit margin. This is not something that we can sustain, but it is our commitment to new and innovative care models that we believe will truly remedy what the mentally ill in this community deserve and need. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Knight. Dr. Callahan?
Yeah, my name is Dr. Tony Callahan, William Anthony. I'm a practicing psychiatrist, went to medical school here, left, came back in 1977. I've had the opportunity to work at Hennepin County Medical Center on the University of Minnesota Department of Psychiatry faculty at the former St. Mary's Hospital, Fairview St. Mary's, and now UMMC, University of Minnesota Medical Center, Fairview. Currently, I have a small geriatric outpatient practice, and I'm also engaged as a psychiatric consultant to the Fairview Corporation. And finally, I'm the chief medical officer of the Fairview Behavioral Healthcare Providers, which is a managed mental health care company. In that capacity, I talk to psychiatrists all around the state, probably 50 of them a week, at hospitals throughout the five-state area. I have some observations. Does the metro area need a new 140-bed acute psychiatric hospital? I would say no, and I hope the committee is able to make the decision based on the evidence and the incisive analysis of your own Minnesota Department of Health, rather than on the painful anecdotes that you've heard. The 3 points. I think the barriers to access are the lack of inpatient beds. The barriers are three. So there's a shortage of inpatient providers, that is psychiatrists, clinical nurse specialists, and nurse practitioners who can attend inpatients. Two, there's a shortage of discharge options so that the inpatient beds get clogged. We have people waiting in our hospital who don't need to be there, but we have no place to send them. And three, overall there's a shortage of healthcare dollars, particularly a shortage of mental health care dollars, and we don't want to spend this precious resource on more inpatient psychiatric beds. You know, the superhighway to better access for mental health services needs more bicycles and buses, not BMWs. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Is Dr. Perdue or Ms.?
She's ill. Dr. Perdue is unable to attend.
She has probably what I have. Ms. Critter, thank you for your testimony. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Sarah Krieger. I'm a Vice President of the Healthy Care System, and I'm the CEO of St. Joseph's Hospital in St. Paul. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we just want to reemphasize that we, too, support the department's position that additional psychiatric hospital beds are not in the community's best interest and are not in the patient's best interest, even those that were described in the story today. We have convened and have supported a East Metro collaborative work group, which has included 40 agencies, both hospitals, health plans, and community social services agencies. That collaborative and other community efforts have identified appropriate solutions for our mentally ill community members. We need to expect improved care at more appropriate costs from these solutions. Every day, mentally ill patients are in our hospitals in psychiatric beds that do not need to be there. And they do not meet hospital inpatient criteria. But they can't be discharged because we lack housing, medication, access, and non-hospital crisis intervention for the mentally ill. You heard some numbers earlier about a Twin Cities study that has been occurring, where we've identified as many as 46 to 70 patients on any given day who are in hospital beds that don't need to be there. And we just simply can't discharge them. The solution is to continue to put our attention and resources into services in the community that will support our mentally ill community members. The answer is to put our attention and our resources into community housing and residential treatment, to provide the support needed to keep our community members enrolled in funding programs so they can pay for medication, to continue to create urgent care type crisis centers where community members can go for support, start medications, and set up services in the community that will support and sustain them. We also believe we need to create more of the services, not more expensive hospital beds or even a separate facility. These solutions should improve care for the mentally ill in the community regardless of their ability to pay. And again, we should expect improved care at more appropriate costs from these solutions. At Healthy Care System and at St. Joseph's Hospital, we're developing a unit that specializes in the care of medical psychiatric patients. We're going to be utilizing and delivering an integrated approach to care that includes both psychiatric and medical providers and resources within our full-service hospital. And as mentioned by my colleagues in the community, that is more and more one of our biggest issues. It's the medically complex psychiatric patients that are continuing to challenge us. And we don't think that the proposed solution to a new hospital resolves that. They are not able to care for those patients. This is excellent care for our patients and most cost-effective for the community. An additional hospital in this community would only serve to add to the most expensive type of care, and we don't believe this is the right kind of care. We believe this would adversely put current medical health care programs and many patients at risk, since it will dilute very limited psychiatric resources and direct needed resources away from the right solutions that have been identified and are currently being implemented by community providers collaboratively. Those stories that we heard today are sad stories. They are the result of a healthcare industry that needs to continue to work on the right solutions. They're counting on us. Mr. Litchfield's wife and Mary needed emergency department, and I believe even Mary probably needed a hospital that was able to treat her medical, complex medical condition, post-suicide attempt, as well as the psychiatric needs that she had. They need us to find the right solutions, those described earlier, those that are happening and will continue to support the needs of the mentally ill patients, regardless of their ability to pay, regardless of the condition they present with. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sir, did you have something to share? Or you?
No, Madam Chair, I'm here with Sarah Krieger. My name is Joe Klub from Healthy St. Joseph's Hospital. I'm the Director of Behavioral Care. Madam Chair and the committee, I would just like to support the St. Joseph's statements, and I'd like to support the department's proposal and stand on that.
Thank you for your statement. All right, members. Representative Wardlaw? Oh, no. Yep. Representative Wardlaw.
Have we moved the minutes yet?
Yes, Representative Wardlaw.
I had to go to the coffee release point, so, you know.
It's Friday.
Okay, I have a question. I'm reading this letter from NAMI. They have some good questions. Number one, they're concerned about, are we going to be stealing psychiatrists from other facilities? Another one was the question about mental disease. IMD cannot bill for federal Medicaid dollars, so it would be 100% assistance from state. That'd be a question that could be answered perhaps in the next committee. And then what about the experience around the country about other large freestanding mental hospitals? Those are kind of three questions that jumped out at me. But I have one more thing to say, but if you want to try to answer that now or reserve it later.
Representative Wells.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wardlaw, I have had conversations with
Prairie St. John's about the recruitment of psychiatric health professionals. And they, their intention, and I believe that they were sincere in their commitment, was that they would be actively recruiting for medical schools and other regions of the nation in order to bring in highly qualified personnel to this hospital. The other two questions, I am not familiar with that. Perhaps.
Mr. Ryan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Wardlow. As far as, I'm not sure exactly which point you wanted me to address. As far as recruiting nationally, we definitely have every intention to do that. The long-term solution is to train and retain more psychiatrists inside our own state, and we are participating to the extent possible with our limited facilities in the Twin Cities right now in training programs, and we have every intention to participate more fully if we have an inpatient hospital. As far as our ability for to take IMD, with the IMD exception and program IM, we understand that it would be an impact to the state's budget, to DHS's budget, but it is the policy of the state in enacting that law to care for those patients, to fund those patients in our facility. And if that's no longer the policy of the state, that would be a different issue. But we absolutely do want to care for as many people as possible in whatever way possible.
Representative Wardlow?
And the experiences around the country of similar facilities.
Mr. Sure. Ryan?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Wardlow. The experiences around the country are varying, and several states have made the mistake of creating different classifications for psychiatric hospitals in that they're subacute, and they're not bound by EMTALA, which we would be. Which means that they don't have to accept every patient regardless of their ability to pay, which we would do. So if an unfunded patient shows up in some states, shows up at a private standalone psychiatric facility, they'll be told that they can't receive treatment there because they have no ability to pay. We would not be allowed to do that by law or by the ethics of our organization. We would treat that person and stabilize them before, and find additional outpatient resources for them before we would discharge them.
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you. And I do have one comment. You mentioned something about vets and returning vets. I'd like to talk a little bit about a certain Marine Cobra pilot I know quite well. One night over Fallujah in 2004, while protecting a huge slick, he tried to acquire a machine gun that was shooting at the slick. Couldn't find it because it quit shooting. Soon he started taking 50 caliber machine gun. That's a huge bullet. He couldn't acquire it. It quit shooting. And then he saw this streak coming right at him. An SA-16, he banked right and it hit his skid. Blew out his starboard engine, shrapnel hole right by his head all over the place, but he was able to fly it down to a safe spot. The next morning they saw what happened and realized it was an SA-16. They had night vision goggles, which nobody knew they had before. Thank you, Syria. But he came home. And unbeknownst, he couldn't figure out why he was always angry, always mad. And he went to a 4th of July parade and saw the fireworks, couldn't watch them. That's when he discovered something was wrong. Fortunately, he was still active duty and got treatment for it, and he's doing fine now. And he doesn't need to be hospitalized. But I'm thinking, what about that young Marine or soldier who has been through numerous firefights, ambushes, IED explosions, seen numerous bodies of his friends in combat? When he comes home, he may or may not realize he's got PTSD either, but later on, it services and people like that. And I've known people who, I mean, I think there's a direct correlation to the violence of their outbreaks and the violence they went through repeatedly. That's what I'm concerned about, because we're having more and more and more vets coming home. How many of them will have this disorder or other reasons? Mm-hmm. And how many of them don't even know it? And what's going to happen if we don't have a place to put them? Now, I understand some of these will be outpatient, which they wouldn't need the hospital bed, but still, that's a concern for me. And I've heard both sides of this story, of this issue. It's not a story. And I just think it's too important not to move on to the next committee for further discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Borges. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's interesting to me that both sides of this issue recognize that there are problems. They just have different solutions. I believe that there is a serious problem, and I have dealt with these kinds of issues as a professional college administrator and as a leader in the community. And I have a unique perspective in that my community is served by Prairie St. John's, as well as hospitals providing similar kinds of services. And I and my staff have worked closely with staff of Prairie St. John's and the staff of the hospitals. And I can tell you that they not only can peacefully coexist, they do. And they both have a niche to play. And I can tell you from my experience that Prairie St. John's is a quality organization providing quality care. And let me just give you one little example of their outreach to the community. They have been doing these public service announcements that talk about if you've got someone in your family who's exhibiting certain behaviors, Prairie St. John's is there to serve your family. And if you don't come to Prairie St. John's, please go somewhere else. And I think that that has helped educate the public to the fact that there are choices in terms of the care that they might need. And a lot of times, I don't think the public knows. Obviously, if someone has attempted suicide and they've cut themselves or have ingested large quantities of some chemical, they need medical care immediately, and they're going to immediately think of a hospital. But there are a whole host of other crises that arise that maybe a different environment is a better alternative. So I just wanted to share that I believe that they can peacefully coexist. And I certainly understand how existing providers would be somewhat questioning whether what this is going to do to their clientele, their patient load. But from the experience I've seen, I think they're overly concerned.
Thank you, Representative Lanning. Representative Huntley, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Chairwoman Walker. As some of you know, I've been involved in this issue for a long time, and I have helped Chairwoman Walker pass her bill last year that should have passed 2 years before that, but did not. And I think that's made a dramatic change in our environment. But I've been at meetings year after year after year where emergency room physicians come in, and particularly one I remember the most was from Regent's Hospital down the street, about the fact that people would come in and some sort of psychotic episode on a Friday night, and they couldn't find a room for them until Tuesday or Wednesday, and that was a routine kind of thing. And granted, the regions have started to address their problem and added some beds, which should help that problem. If you look at page 8 of the Department of Health handout there, and you look at the Northeast, where we have a large number of patient days that aren't patient from our area of the state. And I can tell you in my two hospitals in Duluth, Minnesota, about 5% of their admits for mental health issues are from the Twin Cities that have been referred up there, and that's 150 miles. And when you have a teenage kid that's suicidal, do you really want them 150 miles away from their home? So I think that this bill is needed. I think these beds are needed. And as to the shortage of psychiatrists, Chairwoman's Walker's bill last year raised their rates about 25%. And the fact that there is a shortage of psychiatrists, which everybody agrees, maybe if there's some competition for those people, their wages are going to go up, which will mean that more young people will choose psychiatry as a profession. So I strongly support this bill.
Thank you. Representative Garland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know time is short. I should quit while we're on a roll because I, too, plan to support this bill, but I have three questions for Mr. Ryan first. And one of them is the question has come up about integrating mental health care, and we heard about the nurses that would be there. What would you also do with neighboring hospitals for integrating more serious things than the type of medical conditions that were talked about? Because I am a big supporter of integrating mental health care and regular health care. And then, two, the issue that we're all talking about, the shortage of psychiatrists, how do you plan to staff, at least initially, the hospital with this increased number of beds, and where do you plan to look, and do you have any outstate recruitment plans rather than just looking at our pool that's already too small? And then thirdly, it has been brought up that the East Metro Working Group has been working to solve the problem, and of course we all know that this problem isn't solved, but how do you plan to work with them, or how are you working with them? And some have even said you haven't worked with them. And so could you talk about those three things?
Mr. Ryan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Greiling. As far as integration, we published an open letter to the CEO of Woodwinds, inviting them to collaborate and to find ways in which we could work together. We've had some of the representatives of Woodwinds have come up and toured our facility in Fargo. And at this point, I think it's premature to announce plans to collaborate when we don't have permission to build yet. But we are absolutely open to working with every provider, every hospital, and as we do up in Fargo with our neighboring hospitals. You know, I think that we're going to try to be as flexible as possible to meet the needs of the Twin Cities. Meet the unmet needs and raise the bar. You know, challenge other hospitals to compete with us for levels of charity care. Challenge them to compete with us for positive outcomes of patients. As far as psychiatrists and our staffing, I'm aware of at least one psychiatrist in Hawaii who's contacted us, who said, "I trained in Minnesota and I'm interested in coming back. Let me know when you guys have a hospital, and I'll be there." You know, a lot of the problems in staffing inpatient psychiatric beds is that psychiatrists look at the difference between inpatient and outpatient and say, "I'm going to take the easy road and go outpatient." We've had a lot of interest from psychiatrists that are just graduating that say, "I never would have considered inpatient, but I'm willing to consider it with you guys because of the fact that we're physician psychiatrist led, because they are our most valued employee and we respond to their needs, I think, in certain ways that other hospitals have difficulties doing." And so realistically, to to hire the staff that we need immediately, we need to employ headhunters to go throughout the nation and recruit the best of what's available. In the long term, we need to train more in Minnesota so that we have a bigger pool for everybody to recruit from. And we need to open their eyes to the potential for practicing an inpatient and the rewarding experience that that can represent. As far as EMACs is concerned, I've attended several EMACs hearings myself, and you know, I think that it's a wonderful idea to, you know, our initial proposal and every single response letter that we've had since has said that we absolutely support that there's a shortage of every single type of service for behavioral health. And that includes subacute care, it includes outpatient care. Our proposal includes subacute partial hospitalization and intensive outpatient, as well as outpatient clinic and our inpatient. You know, it's just that the focus is on our inpatient. But we're absolutely committed to working with EMACs and with the individual entities that are members of EMACs to meshing, not duplicating their services, but meshing with them so that we can fill in the gaps so that not as many patients fall through them.
Thank you. Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A few comments, I guess. I would say I have grave reservations about this proposal. It's probably serious enough to move forward to the next level for discussion because of just the complexity of the issues, but I just want to lay my concerns on the table. First of all, the stories about mental health issues, I get those. I come from a family with mental health issues. I've driven with my brother in the back of transport many, many times. I've spent hours and days in various institutions that have served the needs of mental health patients. So I understand the stories, but I do not believe that this kind of decision should be moved by personal stories. It's too important a decision to make on the basis of the emotional impact that mental health has on individuals and communities. I have not been convinced that this is the right proposal at the right place and the right time. And I'm especially concerned, in addition to the things that have already been laid on the table, I'm especially concerned that NAMI has not endorsed this proposal. I realize they've taken a neutral stance, that they're not opposing it, but the fact that they don't endorse it is very concerning to me because they are the primary advocate for the needs of the consumer of mental health services. Their concerns are paramount to me, and I believe it would be a really serious error for us as a legislature to move this proposal forward without adequately addressing their concerns. So those are my concerns.
Thank you. Representative Root.
Actually, Representative Reinhart articulated some of what I was going to say. This is a tough one. I also encounter many patients in my other life that have a need for mental health services, and there seems to be a little bit of a disconnect between what the Department of Health is stating. However, I have a great deal of respect for our Department of Health, and I take they're finding it seriously. I would like to make a motion, and maybe it's already been made, forgive me if it has, to pass without recommendation. I think there's a lot of discussion that still needs to take place. And
No, Representative Rood, there has not been an official motion of where to go. So Representative Rood's motion is to move House File. I forgot which House File we're on. It's been a long morning. 3539 to Health and Human Services Policy Division without recommendation. Any discussion? Wow, that's deep. Representative Medore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, just explain to me again. So you want to move this without recommendation? So if we vote no on that, what does that mean?
Representative Rood, what that means, you have three other options. You can vote down the bill. A motion can be moved to vote it up or down, which is a one or two,
or a motion can move to be made to table the bill today. So there are four options that members have. If the Representative Brew's motion does prevail, what happens is there was not a vote in deciding yes or nay. This bill would go to Health and Human Service Policy, where there would be a hearing, where similar testimony would be heard, where there'd be a little bit more time for individuals to get now the crust of their issues and concerns and questions answered prior going into health policy. And then depending on the fate of testimony that day, we'll give that committee three options, either to table, vote yes or no.
Well, then I guess I'd like to go on record, and I was not going to do this, Madam Chair, if I can just take a minute. I am not convinced that NAMI endorsement or non-endorsement of this is really an issue. I work with special needs families in my private, in my other life, and over again I have heard horror stories of adult children in households with parents being unable to find beds. I'm disappointed that NAMI is not taking a position on this. I think as a leader in the community, as an advocacy group, we need to hear their voice on this, and I am not really understanding why they are not. I do not believe that the department's report took a thorough and active investigation into the number of referrals that we have from jails. I know in Dakota County, they travel sometimes 400 miles to get a person into a bed at night. And I understand that we want to move towards more outpatient care. I understand all of that philosophy, but the fact of the matter is, those services are not available. And frankly, if I can get somebody into a safe place where they're going to feel comfort, they're going to get the care that they need, maybe it's overkill on the amount of attention that they get and the payment that we have to have for that, but at least it takes care of the person. I would hope that as a department they would be more active in trying to figure out how we're going to fund the community-based programs, especially in the situation they put themselves in now with special needs-based care and managed care managing this. There's a huge movement to privatize these mental health plans under special needs-based care, yet I hear them today saying this is not the way we want to fund our services. So I would like to go on record as saying that I will follow Representative Rude's movement of this bill up to the next level, but I do not want members here to be swayed by the fact that one advocacy organization is the only advocacy organization out there. I think that stories do make a difference, Representative Reinert, and when you've sat with families that have struggled to find adult placements for their children living at home, it is awful. It is an awful, awful situation for families to be into. And most families do not want to go through the emergency room entrance door to get services for their family members. So thank you for giving me a moment. I wasn't going to speak on this. I was just excited to vote it up. But thank you for giving me the moment.
Thank you, Representative Moore, Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if moving it without recommendation is passing the buck.
Sure is, Representative Wardlaw. I'm not going, you know, I'm always keeping it real, so I'm not going to act like that. It's not what we're doing. But in all seriousness, Representative Wardlow, it does do a couple other things. There are several members that are on mental health that are on Health and Human Service Policy. There are some, I think, crucial questions from even for myself, one being, is St. Perry, St. John's tied to the amount of beds that they want to build? Are they completely tied? I know Representative Swells is tied to Woodbury, but is the organization tied to Woodbury?
Madam Speaker.
I don't want to be a Madam Speaker.
I'm sorry, Margaret. Lose her time. Madam Chair, I have spoken with Prairie St. John's about this very issue, and they are perfectly willing to negotiate the number of beds that this hospital would provide. It would be a hospital built on what the appropriate need would be.
Thank you, Representative Wells. Representative Greiling.
Madam Chair, I would just like to go on record that I think we might have had the vote to vote yes without recommendation. So I'm disappointed that we're voting on this motion rather than one to recommend.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Members, just like I stated earlier, it would have been a strong position to have with the recommendation, but there will be a hearing in Health and Human Service Policy. I encourage each one of you, now that you have the report in front of you,
and have a little bit more substance of information to get the rest of your questions answered, specifically. Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the amendment, not the amendment,
the motion,
fails, can we then do another motion?
Yes, Representative Otremba.
Thank you.
Seeing no other hands, Representative Browning, no.
Oh, Madam Chair, I'm just lip reading to somebody over there.
Okay, so you read or not.
But I would just say now, Madam Chair, with that, I think I'm going to vote no on this one in the hopes that we can have a vote with recommendation.
Representative Haas.
I wasn't going to say anything today, but I think it's only fair that we move this without recommendation. In all honesty, I feel somewhat kind of slighted having this report handed to me right before the committee meeting. And I think this is too complicated of an issue with too many questions to simply move with a strong recommendation for or against. I will have to vote no against both of those recommendations. We just sat here today, and I hope we don't use today as a recruitment video to get more representatives, because we were just told today from, I think, very well-intentioned, caring people that no matter what we do, we're going to be voting against the patient. That if we vote for this, it's not in the patient's best interest. And if we vote against this, it's not in the patient's best interest. This is too important of an issue for me that I want to be able to ask more questions. I want to be able to respond to this report, and I want to be able to give Prairie St. John's the opportunity to respond to me. But if we move with a recommendation one way or another, I will have to be voting no against both of those options.
Thank you, Representative Haas. Members, making sure there's, we are going to, what are we doing? Oh, we're going to remove Representative Rude's motion to re-refer without recommendation House File 3539 to the Health and Human Service Policy Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
No.
Now, you know, members, I did say that we were going to have a tough decision today, last week, the week before, but goodness gracious, division myself. All those in favor signify by raising your hand, please. Those opposed? The motion fails.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wardlaw.
I move we pass this on with recommendation.
Representative Wardlaw's motion is to move House File 3539 with a recommendation to the Health and Human Service Policy Committee. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, members, for hanging in there, and the meeting is adjourned.